Hi, everybody. I'm Danny, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Danny.
All right. Grateful to be here. It was a beautiful ride up, and I want to thank Mark, one of my home group members, and his wife for coming up with me. When I asked him, would he come up with me, and he didn't hesitate. You know, that's a great thing about the home group members, and it was, like you say, mountains up here, they're beautiful. So, all right. My sobriety date is September 8th, 2012. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. I have a sponsee who's struggling right now, but I'm not going to turn my back on him because nobody ever turned their back on me in this program. So, let me get to what else. Our home group, we have a home group in Richmond. We meet on Tuesdays and Thursdays. On Tuesdays, we have we break up into three groups. We have an open discussion topic. We have a big book discussion, and we have a newcomers meeting. And on Thursdays, we have an open speaker meeting. So if you have in Richmond, please come, and we'll welcome you. Let's see what else I got. All right, so I guess I'll give you a little background. I have two older brothers, a younger sister. My father was an alcoholic, and I had a mother who was a loving woman, but she was also my biggest enabler. My father was, he was very abusive, mentally and physically. But he's probably more mentally abusive than anything. And I thought he was just like that to me, because it didn't seem to be like that with my other brothers and sisters. For some reason, I don't know why. And, I grew up kind of a shy kid, kind of fearful. And, you hear a lot of people talk about how they felt different. Well, I was no different. I felt different too. Like I wasn't like everybody else. And like I say, my father, constantly told me I was no good and wasn't going to amount to anything. And I guess as a kid, I kind of believed it, So, there was a lot of fussing going on, And it was, let me speak. So there's a lot of fussing going on right now. So it wasn't, the most happiest, childhood for me, but there were good and there were bad days. I think my first recollection of a drink, my grandfather, who also was an alcoholic, he had this little mom and pop store. And my grandfather, like I said, he was alcoholic too. And he always walked around with a cigar in his mouth. He'd be chewing it and he was cursing all the time and stuff like that. But as a kid, I guess I was about 10 or 12, something like that. And I enjoyed working in the store, it was just something different, being somewhere different. And for some reason, he used to curse everybody out there used to come in there. His motto was, the customer was always wrong. I remember one time, a customer disputed, saying the price was wrong. And I agreed with the customer. And my grandfather said, well, you don't tell me. And so he said, come on back here. So he carried me in the back. So it was this, I saw this jug and had this white stuff, and I thought it was water. And he said, this is what you need. You need a drink of this. So I took a drink of that, and that stuff took my breath away. And, so that was my first recollection of a drink. So anyway, I had a few friends. My brothers didn't really kind of hang with me too much. They kind of hung with their own friends. And, so I kind of, like I say, was shy and feel, stuff like that. So I had a cousin who kind of took an interest in me, and I got a chance to go up to his house a whole lot. And that's where my grandmother lived also. And we would go up there for like dinners and stuff like that. So it was kind of like a little refuge for me to kind of get away from home a little bit. And, it was pretty good. And, like I said, my father was mentally abusive. So I remember this one time, he came to get me at school, and I guess I was in grade school, and he came to get me, and he just as we were getting ready to leave, one of the kids said, "Hey, Danny, you left your hat." So my father, he turns around and says, "Well, he'd forget his head if it wasn't glued onto his shoulders." And then all the kids just laughed. And I kind of like hid my head down. I just kind of walked out the room like that. He would constantly just do stuff like that, so I guess I kind of grew a little angry with him, kind of kind of almost hate, I guess, to a certain extent. Because he just seemed like he was always picking on me. You know, not picking on my other brothers, but it just always seemed like he was picking on me. So, anyway, eventually, my oldest brother, he went into the service. And so he had left home. So it was just my brother next to me and my younger sister there. And, you know, my father was there sometimes and then sometimes he wasn't. And he eventually... and he kept losing jobs. He kept losing a lot of jobs. He would have a job, and then he didn't have a job. And I would always be like, man, I hope he get a job. I hope he has a job. So, you know, and it kind of left my mom, her having two jobs and had to kind of support us and stuff. So, you know, I remember saying to myself, I'm never going to be like him, you know, drinking and losing jobs. I'm never going to be like him. So anyway, I guess after that, an expressway was coming toward our house, right through where our house was. So we had to end up moving, and we ended up moving to another part of town. So the cousin who I used to kind of find refuge in, you know, because I was in like what I call bicycle range, I could drive my bicycle up there. But because we moved to another part of town, I no longer saw him as much, you know. So I'm back again, you know, none of my friends and. You know, I have to get new friends. So for somebody who's really shy and like I was, you know, it wasn't the most easiest thing to do. So I think about this time I was in middle school, and so I remember going to school the first day. And back then we didn't have those backpacks, you know, so we had to carry those heavy books, you know, on our arms and stuff like that. So it was a good little distance, and we had to walk to school. So I ended up. Meeting some people and meeting this guy, and found out he lived like around the corner from me, and he had showed me this shortcut through the woods. So I'm like, wow, man, I like this because you know, it's a shortcut, and I got to carry these books as long. And I think we even stopped at the store one day and brought me this jelly donut, and I'm like, man, this guy's okay. You know, I think I'm gonna like this guy. And he was kind of an outgoing guy. So quite naturally, I kind of drew to him because, you know, me being shy and him being outgoing, you know, we became good friends. I mean, we just did everything together. So eventually, I guess we go to high school, and so, you know, like I said, we did everything together. We went to basketball games and dances, all kind of stuff. I remember, and like I said, I was telling you how shy I was. We used to go to basketball games, and, you know, while the game is going on, you know, I'm okay, and as long as I'm in a crowd. But one time I had to go to the bathroom, but because of my shyness, I mean, I didn't want to walk past while the game, because I had this feeling like everybody was looking at me, you know. And so I literally almost went to the bathroom by myself because I was that, you know, shy and going to the bathroom. So that was the extent of my shot. I mean, I was just really shy. So anyway, like I said, we did a lot of things together. We would go to dances, and I remember, and I was afraid of girls for some reason. Don't ask me why, but it was. So, I remember when we went to those dances in the gym and stuff like that. And the girl wanted to dance with me. I had my hands on the wall like I was like Spider-Man, like I was glued to the wall. And they would try to pull me off the wall to dance, and you know, there was no going even there. So eventually, you know, we discovered we started drinking wine. I think it was Boone Farm, Manny Green Springs, and Wild Irish Rose. Mm-hmm. So we started drinking, you know. And I started noticing something about when I was drinking that wine. All of a sudden, I felt like I could kind of talk to the girls, you know? I'm like, huh. You know, I tell you, I don't know if you ever seen this sitcom called The Big Bang Theory, where there's a guy on there who he can't talk to the women unless he drinks. Well, that was me, you know? So, you know, like I say, so went to a lot of things, went to a lot of games, a lot of stuff like that. And, you know, wasn't having any consequences at this time because it was pretty much social drinking. We were just drinking on weekends and stuff like that. So, let's see, I guess about this time, I don't think of anything happened during that time. Nothing much, pretty much regular high school, you know, didn't, you know. you know, like I said, at home about that time, I think my other brother, he ended up going to service. So I'm at home now with just me and my sister. And so I kind of felt like I was supposed to be the man of the house, I guess. And so when in high school, I think eventually my best friend, he decided he wanted to go into service too. And so he asked me to go with him, but for some reason I said, well, I'm going to stay here, I'm stay home, try to help mom, you know, be the man of the house, so, you know, like that. And so I didn't go. So I ended up going to a local university, you know, because I, you know, felt that I was going to try to, you know, better myself, getting to go to college and stuff like that. So at first, when I went to college, you know, did pretty well first year, maybe first year and a half, so like that. Then all of a sudden, I found I had another relative who had an off-campus apartment. And, man, the party started then. I started going down there frequently. And drugs are a part of my story. I'm not going to dwell on it. But, you know, I started doing all kind of pills, marijuana, cocaine, you name it. I started doing it all. And anything that just kind of made me feel different, you know. And so, you know, like I said, I was doing pretty well in school. Until, you know, we just kept going on these parties. I mean, we started partying all the time, you know, and always, you know, like I say, you know, once I started drinking, I could talk to the girls. But my only problem with that was once I started, I couldn't stop. You know, I remember one time, this is, I'm backing up a little bit to high school when I went over this young lady's house one time, and, I remember I started drinking so I could kind of get my confidence up, but I think I passed out. That probably was my first little blackout. And I remember her nudging me and waking me up, and I looked up and I saw her mom, and she had this look of disgust on her face. And so quite naturally, that didn't work out too well. So, you know, just afraid of those women. I don't know what it was about them. And so my drinking and stuff started increasing. And, it started to affect my classwork, you know, because I started going to the apartment when I started going to class. And I guess now is probably when I'm starting to get a few consequences. I remember one time it started getting so bad. I remember one time I came and I was sitting in class and I looked around and I'm like, these people don't look familiar to me for some reason. And to this day, I don't know whether it was the wrong day, the wrong time. I don't know what it was. But I know that's how far my drinking had started carrying me, you know. So, you know, it was getting kind of rough. So eventually, like I said, my grades suffered. And eventually got an academic warning and suspension and, you know. So all of a sudden, I said, well, you know something? I'm going to just go out and give me a job. That's what I'll do. I'll try to get me a job. So quite naturally, you know, got a job. And started drinking a little more. And I still don't know at what point did I cross that line where drinking became, you know, that I had to have it every day. But I know some at that point I probably crossed over. And, you know, so I started going to jobs and stuff like that. And I would eventually, you know, I started losing jobs. You know, this story started saying for me, and I started saying like my father, losing jobs. And so I would always get another job, you know, work for a while, and end up losing another job, you know. And still at this point, I didn't think nothing was wrong, you know. I was still blaming other people, blaming that boss or blaming that person didn't like me or something like that. You know, it never was me. So eventually, I guess finally, maybe I went to my first residential treatment program by this time, and really the only reason I went because the job told me, you know, they said, if you want to keep your job, you know, you need to go get some help, you know. So I went there, and eventually, you know, I came out of there, and you know, did pretty well for a while. You know, I kind of had one foot in and one foot out, you know, the half measure stuff they talk about. So, And I remember somebody would always ask me, what step were you on? And I would always say the fourth step, you know, because I always heard that was a hard step, you know, that inventory step, you know. So I always tell somebody the fourth step. And I would always get there a few minutes after the meeting would start, and I was one of the first ones out the door at the end. So I wouldn't have to talk to them about it, you know, ask me any questions, you know. I had a sponsor, but I never called him. So, you know, I guess I was kind of like having a dry drunk for a while, you know, and it lasted for about a year. And, you know, just didn't do take none of the suggestions that the program suggests that you do, you know. I, you know, weren't working any steps, wasn't doing anything. And so eventually I ended up going back up. So ended up drinking again, and drinking got worse. Probably was drinking beer, wine, and liquor, everything, you name it, I was drinking. And, so, you know, ended up still working again, losing jobs and stuff. And the job that actually I'm on today, I remember again, you know, I was missing a lot of days from there. I would call in so many times. I think I killed off all my relatives, you know, said all the dad. So, you know, so I was running out of people to call in about. And so, you know, it got kind of rough. And I didn't lose my license, but for some reason I kept losing a lot of cars. And so anyway, I was, I remember also, you know, people would say, because for some reason when I drank, I like to drive fast. And I'm not a fast driver, but when I drank, I like to drive fast. Don't know why. And I remember somebody telling me when they said, we saw you last night, man, you were just flying down the street, you know. And I'm like, wow, yeah. Yeah, so anyway, used to frequent these places, and we used to call them little smitties. This is just a place where people would come to drink and you know, do whatever. And so I used to frequent a lot of those places. And I would always go from place to place because every time I'd go there, somebody did me wrong, you know. And never did I look at myself as being one of that I could be the problem, you know. I always thought it was somebody else. So went to a whole lot of them, you know. Like I say, I was in between jobs. I would have a job, then I would lose a job. I'd have a job, lose a job. Eventually, my sister got married. She moved out, so it was nobody there but my mom and me. And let's see. And I just kept. Let me get out of my head here for that. So, let me tell you about some of the consequences as a direct result of my drinking. And I used to get stopped numerous times, and I remember one time telling the cop, you know, he stopped me, and they always ask you that question, have you been drinking, you know, and I never understood that, but anyway, I remember one time I told the cop, I said, I had just had this fight with my wife, and I went to a friend's house, and he told me maybe I should go home and try to make up with her, and this cop said, well, you know, I think that's a great idea, I think you should, you know, go ahead and, you know, make up to her, but you know, I was hoping he didn't follow me and find out I didn't have no wife, you know. But, so that was one. Another little story, you know, like I say, all these were direct results of by drinking. And one day, this is during the time when I didn't have a car, and I was walking to the barbershop that day, and I was coming from the barbershop, and it wasn't too far from where I lived. So I was coming down Main Street, I looked up and I saw this young lady knocking on the door to one of the places that, like I said, we call them Smitties. And this particular Smitty, my cousin lived at. And I knew at that time he was in jail. So I was telling her, I was like, well, you know, I was calling her, I said, you know, we started walking, you know, I was telling her that he was in jail. And we started walking toward the corner. And it was a little side street, you know, right there. I was giving a turn right there in the side street. So anyway, this is a main street. So while we were talking, I looked up the street, and I saw this car. And about the same time, this car all of a sudden just, it must have saw us the same time. And the car just like went from like 0 to 50 in about 2 seconds. I mean, this car zoomed. So I'm like, I'm turning down the street, and I'm like kind of thinking, you know something, this might be her husband or boyfriend or something, you know. And So he doesn't even stop the car. He bounces the car up on the curb. So about this time, I decide, you know, it might be a good reason thing for me to do is start running. You know, because I don't think he's going to understand me walking with her that I just saw her. So anyway, so I started running down the street. And I could hear her yelling, "I don't even know him, I don't even know him." So right about that time, I hear his gunshots. So he's shooting at me. So now this is a flat sidewalk. All of a sudden I fall. Don't know why I fell. You know, wasn't nothing to, nothing for me to trip over, but I fell, you know. I'm using that saying that God just put me on the ground so those bullets could fly out of my head. But luckily I got out of that. He didn't follow me, and he went on about his business. But I remember the next day I talked to a friend of mine who lived in that same block, and he lived about middle of the way of the block. And he said, "Danny, I saw the whole thing." He said, I called you. I tried, because he was out there working in the yard. He said, "I was going to try to get you in the house." He said, "But man, you were running so fast." He said, "Man, I didn't even know you could run that fast. You were like one of those Olympic sprinters." So, you know, we could laugh about it a little bit, but it wasn't funny when it happened, I tell you. So anyway, you know, things just constantly happen. I would be in places where people shot off guns. I was, involved in just all kind of things. I mean, with being in there, and police would knock on the door, and I was always like one step out of not getting arrested or something like that, you know, because I was always in these wrong places at the wrong time. And it's a direct result of my alcoholism, because for some reason, I had to be around other people when I was drinking, you know. So, you know, like I said, it got worse. And I remember one time too, I used to get so mad, you know, it was time for to go to the store before 12 o'clock to get that last call for alcohol, you know. And I used to tell them, you know, like, "Come on, we got to go, we're not going to make it." "Oh, we're going to make it. And we get there, and I'm going to tell you, man, it was the worst feeling seeing them put that chain across that door. We couldn't get no more alcohol. That was the worst feeling. And like I said, I was drinking beer about that time, and I remember when I used to get to that 11th beer, I used to start getting depressed because it was like I'm going to run out. You know, that's how far alcohol was, man. I had to have it. And, you know, alcohol was just like, it was my world. You know, my every waking moment was just trying to figure out how I was going to get that next drink. What was I going to do? So anyway, like I said, it was getting worse. Losing jobs back and forth. And I remember it had finally gotten to the point where I was, I don't know why I'm losing my train of thought. That's what happens when you drink for over 40 years, I tell you. But it was finally getting to the point. I remember one time, you know, we used to have a lot of overtime at work sometimes. And my boss was kind of, you know, he knew how I was, and he knew I was drinking and stuff like that. So he would kind of excuse me. He's like, you know, "I don't know if Danny's going to be here, but we're going to have some overtime this weekend." So, you know. And very seldom I'd make it because I'd be somewhere hungover or something like that. So eventually, you know, like I said, it got worse. And I started going back and forth to numerous little treatment places. I could do the treatment thing for a minute, you know. I would do all right for a while, and then I would come back, and you know, things would get worse. And so I remember finally, my mom suggested that, my older brother also suggested. He said, "Why don't you go up to Maryland with your other brother, my brother that was next to me?" So you know, this is in between jobs, and he said that, you know, he'd take me for a while. So I went up there, and, you know, that geographical change that people think that'll help you. And so this is my goody two-shoes brother. Nothing, you know, he didn't do anything wrong, nothing like that. So we went up there, and things went well for a little while. But eventually, he had one of those jobs where he traveled a lot. And so he had to go away for about a week. So I'm left there, you know, all alone in this, it was a huge complex. And I would go over to the little strip mall every day, you know, just to get out of the house. And eventually I ended up meeting some people because, you know, an alcoholic would find another alcoholic. And end up going, you know, start going over there with these guys, you know, freaking in their house and stuff like that. So eventually on one night we were there, and we were doing alcohol and drugs and stuff like that. And I remember there was a knock on the door, and it was these two Montgomery County police officers in there. And one looked like he was about 7 feet. He was about probably 6'5", something like that. But he was real tall. And at the time, I didn't know that one of the guys that came to the house was robbing banks and stuff like that. So I didn't, I didn't know. So they were looking for him. So anyway, they asked if had anybody seen him, and one of the guys said no. And so they said, well, do you have a search warrant? So anyway, so the guy starts pulling his gun out and starts talking about my 9mm is my search warrant. So I'm sitting there like, oh man, I'm getting ready to get killed here. You know, so luckily the other cop had the cooler head and he put his hand on his gun and you know, they left. So, you know, like I say, I just always was in those places and it was a direct result of my drinking. Eventually, you know, and that week seemed like an eternity that my brother was gone. And I started to fund my drinking and drugging. I started taking things from my brother's apartment. You know, and it started off small. It just started off just a little few, a little change, a little stuff like that. Next thing I know, when I looked around, man, that stuff was really gone at their apartment. So I was like, man, I don't know what I'm going to do now. My brother gets back, but, you know, kept drinking and kept drinking so that, you know, we'd do something with the pain, something like that. So, he eventually came back, and as you know, he was quite angry, and he sent me back to Richmond. So ended up another few years, you know, and he didn't talk to me for a while after that, which was understandable. And so ended up going back to Richmond, and you know, drinking and getting worse. You know, always, and I remember trying different things, you know, like. I'm gonna stop on my birthday. I'm gonna stop at the beginning of the year. I won't drink on the weekends. I even tried to drink liquor. You know, I said, well, maybe I won't drink as much if I drink liquor. But that didn't work either. So you know, things were just really getting worse. So eventually, I guess I don't know what's going on. I guess about that time, I think that my mom had passed by then. So I was at home, you know, my mom. So I think my mom passed about then. So so now I'm at the house by myself. So eventually the house that I was living in, you know, I ended up turning that into one of those smithies, one of those places where everybody comes over to drink, you know. So I was kind of like up all times of the day, all times of the night, then still trying to go to work. And it was rough. So eventually, you know, and paying bills and stuff like that just seemed like, you know, I would get a bill and just like throw it in the drawers if it's gonna magically get paid. You know, every day when I would come home from work, I never knew whether the lights would be off, the water would be off, and eventually the water was off, but I would get water from my neighbor. The lights went off. He had friends who knew. One thing about being with that type of people all the time, you know, they knew all the ins and outs. So they knew how to turn their meter back on. So he had lights for a while. But but eventually they just came and took the meter all the way out. but that still didn't stop me. I mean, you know, I still was just drinking, you know. And how I was making it to work, I do not know. But, you know, still making it to work. And, you know, I started feeling a little hopeless, you know. You know, I'm like, you know something, I'm not going to ever get myself together. And I'm destined to die, you know, out here drinking and drinking like this. So I remember one weekend I came home and, one week after work and I came home. And I had just enough money. I said, I could either get some food or I can get something to drink. So you can imagine what I did. And I remember that weekend, man, I was like very hungry, you know. Right after all the drink was gone and all the people were gone, because once if you didn't have anything, you know, all of a sudden those fair weather friends, they left, you know. So, eventually, you know, like I say, things started getting worse at work. I eventually, you know, finally, even my bosses finally had said, you know, enough is enough. I mean, you know, you're starting to miss too many days. And but really, about that same time, I had kind of like, I had hit enough. I mean, you know, like I say, life was just terrible. I was like in this little vacuum. I mean, like, I was imprisoned in my own mind because the only thing I thought about was drinking. And, you know, I didn't think about going nowhere, doing nothing with family. And family had already, you know, kind of like didn't want to have anything to do with me. The few friends that I used to have, they didn't want to have anything to do with me. So, you know, only people I was dealing with, the people who were coming into the house drinking and then, you know, like that. So eventually, I remember too, this was one of the times when the power was on. And I remember one day I was sitting at home, and usually on Sundays the church programs are on. So I was listening, and I'm like, why are the church programs not on? And all of a sudden I realized it's not Sunday, it's Monday. You know, I'm like, oh man, I'm supposed to be at work. So, again, calling in, and I try to remember which relative I killed off so I could blame, you know, relative dad, something like that. And like I say, I was about ready. I mean, I had hit bottom. I mean, I knew if I kept going that way, I was going to die. So about that same time, though, they also had hit enough, and we had a meeting at work, and they said, well, you know, what do you want to do? You know, you're a valued employee. You know, you've been here for years, and we'd like to keep you, but, you know, we can't have you doing what you're doing. And about that time, they said, well, you need to get some help. And I was ready. You know, I was like, yeah, I'm ready. You know, so ended up, I wanted to go to like an inpatient treatment program because it seems that the longest period I stayed sober was after going to the inpatient place. You know, like I said, I could do treatment very well. So I went there and, I didn't go to the inpatient. They ended up telling my insurance, said, well, we think you should go to an extensive outpatient program. And I'm like, oh man, how's this going to work? You know, so I ended up going to an extensive outpatient. It was for 3 months. And what I ended up doing, I knew if I stayed at that house with people coming over constantly, day and night, that I wasn't going to fare too well. So I remember I had a stepbrother at that time who lived in the West End. And it was one of those weekends that I was out of money, I was hungry, I just decided to just leave the house and go live with him. Because he had offered to, keep me, you know, if you ever want to get yourself together, come on over, you know. So I ended up going over there, staying with him. And, you know, it was a better environment, didn't have to worry about, you know, nothing. So I was going to this outpatient program for 3 months. I think it was 3 days a week. Or 2 days, I can't remember what it was. Anyway, I still had doubt whether I could make it because, I mean, I'm going there, and I took a leave of absence of work. So I would go there, and I'm like, man, what am I going to do the days when I'm not there? Because when I'm there, I felt safe, and I was okay with what I was going to do. But you know, I was determined this time. I said, I'm going to work on this thing, and, you know, try to do my best. And, you know, ended up going for that, you know, like I said, made it for 3 months. I don't know how, but it did. Made it for 3 months. And after that, I think they had a 2-month aftercare. I went to that. You know, I was there every day. I did everything and they asked me to do. And, you know, finally got away from there. So this is about 5 months now. So, you know, they suggested, well, we were going to meetings during that time, you know, but I wasn't going to that many meetings, but anyway. You know, they suggested that, you know, to sustain you, and you know, you'd have to get into some kind of 12-step program. And I kind of, since I had a little bit of knowledge of the program, you know, I said, well, yeah, I know that's what's going to keep me going, you know. So ended up going, started going to meetings and stuff like that. And this time, you know, I was willing to sign to do whatever they say, you know. And I do remember something in the big book that talked about rarely have those failed who thoroughly followed that path. That was something that for some reason stuck in my mind. So I said, I'm going to do everything they tell me to do. So I ended up coming to a meeting one day, and And I actually met my sponsor, backing up a little bit, I met my sponsor in one of those Smitties, but he found the rooms 7 years before I did. So I went to this meeting one time, and I saw this guy, and he started, he said, "Hey, Dan, how you doing, man?" And I said, "All right." You know, he started asking me about all these people. So I'm like trying to figure out, he knows everybody I know, but I'm trying to figure who he is. You know, I don't know who he is. And like I said, he had found a room 7 years before I did. And he had a total different look about him. And whatever it was, I knew I wanted it. And he had a glow about him. And just, you know, I said, I want that, you know. So eventually, he agreed to be my sponsor. And he was telling me about this home group, you know. So I'm like, well, what's this home group going to do for me? You know, he said, man, it's a special home group. You're going to love it. The people are loving there. And, you know, we do things. I mean, you're going to love this home group. It's what's going to keep you sober. So I said, all right, I'll try that, you know. So we go to this home group. And it's similar to this group here, you know, very welcoming, you know. And everybody was nice there. So, you know, started coming there. You know, I started making it to the home group meetings. Slowly but steadily, the process was beginning. My sponsor started working with me. We started doing those steps. And one thing, I didn't have any problem admitting I was an alcoholic. So you know, we started doing it. Found a higher power, you know, something greater than myself. And let me tell you a story, too, about my higher power. You know, like I say, I was still kind of in doubt of what, you know, am I going to make it? Because I had been through that before. You know, I said, am I going to make it, man? Can I do this thing? And so anyway, it was a time because of all the wreckage I had done, you know, I had a car repo that I was paying. I was trying to pay for the rent for where I was living because the house I had lived in, my brother ended up selling that. So, you know, basically I had nowhere to go, so ended up rooming with another guy and a friend of his. And at the time, I knew he drank a little, but I didn't know to what extent. You know, I just at the time just, you know, he was offering a room. I was able to get that room. I could go to my meetings, come back. You know, he wouldn't bother me or nothing like that. You know, so anyway, like I said, bills were, you know, so my sponsor was saying, you know, well, it's time for you to kind of get on your own, you know, get on your own feet now, you know. And, you know, so I was, like, fearful because I'm like, I don't know if I can do this thing financially. I'm still paying this. I'm paying rent, you know. I don't know if I can do it, you know, right now. So he said, well, talk to your high power and see what your high power says, you know. I said, okay. So I talked to my high power. I remember I prayed and to my high power, and I said, you know, I don't know what to do. I said, my sponsor says it's time for me to move on, get a place of my own. You know, I was fearful. I didn't think I had enough money. I wasn't ready, you know, like that. So, you know, give me some, you know, help me out here. Give me some kind of sign or something, because I'm a little hard-headed. You know, I need to see some kind of sign or something. I don't know why I asked for that, because about 10 minutes later, this is true. This is 10 minutes later. I hit the guy who I got the room from. He burst in the room. And up to that point, he would always knock on the door. So he burst in the room. He's got this gun in his hand. And he's telling me somebody's in the house. You know, he's paranoid that somebody's in the house. So I started laughing because I'm like, wow, I knew it was going to happen this fast. So, I mean, I got my answer there. Eventually ended up actually rooming with somebody else who wasn't an alcoholic, wasn't drinking. So, you know, man, things worked out pretty good there with me. Like I say, you know, finished all the steps, you know, and I got a chance to, I tell you, that inventory step was great. That thing, that step that I had feared so much, you know, once I started writing that stuff down and started seeing the person I had become, man, I couldn't believe it, you know, that selfish, self-centered person. You know, I didn't believe it, you know, so I remember doing that fifth step because, you know, you're always so scared to do that fifth step, but I found that fifth step to be a relief for me because I finally got to get rid of some of that baggage and tell somebody else. And it was just so helpful for my sponsor because he started telling me stuff about him and, you know, and it made it a whole lot easier. And it was just beautiful, man, I tell you, going through all those steps and, you know, continuing taking inventory and stuff like that, making amends. You know, I had to make amends to pretty much a lot of people because I hurt a lot of people. And, you know, the hardest amend I had to make was to my brother, the one who I stole everything from his apartment. And, you know, so I eventually talked to him and, you know, and told him, you know, I'm doing better now and I'm, you know, I'm working on it. And he could tell, you know, he could tell when he talked to me, he could see that I was doing all that better. And my other brothers, you know, so family started kind of getting back with me now. You know, I'm starting to go, you know, go back to things. My sister, she started having a little, dinners and stuff, so finally went over for Thanksgiving dinner and stuff like that, and you know, getting together with family, getting together with his brother, who because I didn't know how he was going to react to me, but you know, he was so glad to hear that I was doing well, that I had stopped all that crazy drinking and you know, all that crazy life stuff, and he could generally see that I was just doing better. So, you know, and it's a funny thing now. He actually calls me more than I call him now. So, you know, we've spent a few Thanksgivings together now. You know, we've just done a whole lot of things together now. He comes down often because his class is doing something, and so we talk when he comes down here, and so that's great. You know, eventually, because my mom had died, and I did a whole lot of things that, you know, I wasn't proud of, you know, when she was alive. And so I ended up going to the cemetery and making amends to her. And that was kind of hard, too, because, it was also a lot of relief in that, too. So eventually, like I say, life started changing now for me. Started doing things with the home group. We ended up going to a corrections conference in North Carolina. We went together to the World Convention in Georgia. And I tell you, we had a ball down there. I mean, it's nothing like seeing 50,000 alcoholics saying that serenity prayer. It was wonderful, man. It was one of the greatest experiences I ever had. You know, and my sponsor, I'm going to tell you what was fun. He wouldn't let me just kind of, you know, because I was starting to get a little time under my belt. So I kind of felt like I guess I was going to stop there, you know, like that's it, you know. But he's like, you're not going to stop here. You know, it's time for you to carry the message. It's time for you to help somebody else, you know. And one of the ways we do that in our home group is we do a lot of service work. And we go to a treatment center on Saturdays. He got me involved in that where we go every Saturday. Talk to people there in the detox place. We also do hospital visits where we go and talk to patients there, and it's a good reminder because when you go there and you see people who've been through what you've been through or even worse, and you know, it's a good reminder. So you know, if you decide to go back, this is what's going to happen to you. You know, we also we go to prisons. We go to two prisons. And I'm going to tell you, that is some of the most rewarding work that I've ever had. You know, there's a lot of times, it's a little bit of a drive. And sometimes, you know, I'm off of work and I'm like, man, I don't feel like driving today, but, you know, I'm on a schedule. So, and actually, didn't mention, I am the corrections chair of my group, so I had to go because I put my name on the schedule. And so we would go there and, the guys there welcome you, so I mean they're so glad to see you when you're there, and they thank you over and over again. Thanks for coming, man. Thanks for coming, you know. And you know, it's just so rewarding. I mean, when you leave there, man, you have this feeling. It's like a sober high, and it's one of the greatest feelings that you can experience. And you'd have to go and do it to understand it. And you know, it's like wonderful. I guess today, like I say, my life has changed. you know, I'm a better employee at work now. I'm trying to be of maximum service at my job now. It used to be a time when the boss told us to do something, I'd be just like everybody else. Oh, I won't do it. Or, you know, to try to do it halfway. So now some of my the guys that work with me, they actually get mad with me because now I want to I not only want to do what they ask, I want to do it right. And you know that's a change for me, you know, because I didn't used to be like that. And you know, this program, I had to thank for that, because I know when I came here, man, I just wanted to stop drinking for a little bit. You know, this program, it just made me, you know, it just changed me in so many ways. I know I hear my sponsor say all the time about how life changes, you know, but how life doesn't change, but how we change. And I know I have changed. I know I'm not the same person I used to be. And one of the things I like to say, too, is as far as being chat and stuff like that, because I used to think that because when I would come to meetings and everybody would share and sound so eloquent and stuff like that, I'm like, man, I could never be like that, you know. And so I actually allowed that to not let me recover. But now today I know that you can recover being a shy person, because I'm definitely a shy person. And I've recovered, you know. So, you know, I'm looking forward to growing in this program. And there's probably some things I probably forgot, but I can't remember right now. But Sam, thanks for inviting me up here. And thank you. Thank you.